It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Good morning, everybody. Tom is out today. I'm Curtis Birch sitting in for him. We got a lot of news to get to. We got to talk about broken shoes, Beanie Babies being thrown on court, John Calipari make a recruiting visit, and most importantly, an injury update to Reed Travis. The Wildcat News of the Day is presented by Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. So let's start out with that update on Reed Travis. An MRI was conducted after the team returned to Lexington late Wednesday afternoon, and it confirmed that it was a knee sprain. No other damage to the knee was detected. John Calipari said, "We're going to be very conservative with this, so he may be out a couple weeks. We hope that he will be ready for around conference tournament or maybe even a little bit before. But I'm happy for Reed that it's not going to that we're going to get him back." So there you go. That's the update on Reed Travis's injury. It could have been a lot worse. He will miss some games. How many? We don't know exactly yet, but he will be back in theory before the conference tournament. So that's overall good news. We're going to get into the impact on the team, what that means going forward with Mike Pratt in the next segment. And you know, what does EJ and Nick need to do to step up and try to fill those big shoes that Reed Travis is leaving? The other note from last night is, if you were listening last night, John Calipari did two recorded segments of his coach's show. That was because he was out recruiting last night. He was in North Carolina visiting Isaiah Todd, who is a five-star big man. He is currently in the 2020 class, but there are rumors that he could possibly reclassify, and Kentucky is in big need for a big in the 2019 class, so that it could be the potential one that they could sign up. There's been some picks in the 24/7 crystal ball, so we'll see where that goes. But the important factor that happened that night was he was officially offered a scholarship, which hadn't happened at this point. So Isaiah Todd is a name to be on the lookout for and keep an eye on. You can find links to these stories on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Today on the show, we are going to be talking to, as I mentioned, Mike Pratt. Then we also got Justin Rowland from Rivals. I want to get his thoughts on the shakeup in the UK football coaching staff and that impact on football recruiting. Very interesting. And then also Daryl Bird of the Catsballs. The SEC race was kind of thrown for a loop last night. I think a lot of people had kind of thought they had figured stuff out. But then LSU takes a loss against Florida at home. And now it's Tennessee back on top as it had been for most of this season. Kentucky and LSU are tied at 11-2. Tennessee is 12-1 on the year. So a lot of big matchups coming up the rest of the season. We'll talk about all that with Daryl Bird. Tell you what, let's go to the break because I do want to talk a ton with Mike Pratt about Reed Travis and where we are going to go from here. And if you want to interact with me during the show, you can give me a tweet. I'm at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. And the Leach Report is served up every day by Wild Eggs. We'll be right back.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Welcome back in. Curtis Birch in for Tom today. Leach Report is served up every day by Wild Eggs. As I said in the first segment, news came down. Reed Travis's injury, the MRI, found no other damage to the knee other than the sprain. So the timetable is 2 weeks-ish. And we're here to talk about that is Mike Pratt. And his segments are brought to you by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Mike, how kind of happy were you that it was just a sprain and no other damages to Reed's knee, considering, you know, how great a story he is?
Boy, Curtis, you're right. And That's some really terrific news that we all got last night. Big Blue Nation has to take a deep sigh of relief. And Reed has been a great story. And I think one of the things that's been missing in all of this, why we make ourselves very happy to have him, I think he is very happy to be here. I mean, we've had him post-game a couple times, and I've thrown that out there, and both times he's ran with it, said how much this is meant to him, and you can see by the look many times on the floor. I mean, at Stanford, they didn't sell out all their games. They weren't on television all the time. They weren't a top-five team. This is quite a change, and this young fella really appreciates that, and it would have been sad to see his season end in any way. So it's good news.
Yeah, and you know, the coaches have talked a ton about his selflessness in the sense that he sacrificed a lot of numbers. I mean, he was putting up big-time numbers, being all Pac-12 player at Stanford for a couple years. And, you know, if you just look at box scores, you know, which people who truly follow basketball don't do, but it looked like he might have lost something when it come to Kentucky, but he's actually gained a lot because he's doing a lot of the other little things. And, you know, those aren't going unnoticed, I don't think, by the fans or the coaches. And I, to your point about, you know, kind of feeling appreciated comparatively to Stanford, I think that's something that he's truly embraced as a player as well.
He has, and he's playing with better players, which means that he's not going to put up those lofty numbers. But he has been a terrific leader. He's accepted his role, and he's tried to help the young players, and they appreciate him. His work ethic is at the top of the list when he comes to play in ball games, and the effort he gives in the ball games, not just practice, are appreciated by his teammates and the coaches.
Let's roll through what this absence will mean for guys on the team. We'll start with the other front court starting player, P.J. Washington. You know, after the Tennessee game, John Calipari gave a ton of credit to Travis for kind of taking the body blows from Grant Williams and not allowing P.J. Washington to get what he was getting on the offensive end. And then I guess last night they were talking about how P.J. Washington's going to have to step up and kind of take over some of that physicality that Reed brought. What do you think, P.J., will he be able to do that, and what do you think the impact will have on him in these next couple games?
Well, I think he is capable of doing that. He's played very physically for the last couple months. It'll be interesting to see who he guards against certain people and what positions that Kentucky puts him in offensively. I think it's a great opportunity for Nick Richards and E.J. Montgomery. You've got to take care of this opportunity now. If you can't, then you're sending a message to your teammates and the coaching staff that, you know, maybe you're not cut out for this job. And I'm not trying to put pressure on anybody, mm-hmm. but as a player, you want to have this opportunity. You want the minutes that now come to you. So they're being coached. They're being prepared for this type of situation. And consequently, they should be able to respond and should be joyful in it. I mean, it's not often that a situation like this arises on a top five team and these minutes are out there to be had. I think it's going to change it. And those guys need to bring the defense. They need to bring the rebounding to the table. Reed was really good defensively in the paint. He was really good rebounding. He was quick to the ball, not the most athletic guy or high riser, but, man, he was quick to the ball, and he never failed to battle for it, okay? He never, if he was out of position, he got back in position. So Nick and EJ have to work the boards. They're going to have to play defense, and they're going to have to pick up some of this physicality that Reed brought to the table. Now, offensively, what you have to look at, where was Reed scoring his points out of the offense? And that is how it makes everybody else better around him, because PJ became a pretty good passer. Reed became a pretty good passer. They had a lot of situations, high-low, block-to-block situations, interior passing really picked up. So now what's going to happen defensively? People are going to load up on PJ. They're going to make Nick Richards and EJ Montgomery beat him. They're not going to let PJ beat him. And they couldn't do that as much as you would think because Reed was on the other side of the floor And of course, PGA got very good at kicking the ball out of the block. So you got to look at where you're going to get points like Reed did. Can these guys get them in there? How will they get their points and where will they get their points? And then, of course, it always, in Calipari's mind, starts with the defense and the rebounding. So it's going to be interesting. Two entirely different players than the one that's hurt.
Yeah, because, I mean, you mentioned, this is going to sound silly when you look at Reed Travis and what he's able to do, but his athletic limitations, and you know, and it's not that he's unathletic, but comparatively to the length that EJ and Nick have, they're just different players. But what Reed was so great at is positional defense. And Tony Barbie a couple weeks ago was making a great point about how he'd become a master at staying vertical when he was in the paint, and he wasn't getting those cheap fouls that Nick Richards has so often picked up. You know, Reed would just jump straight up, and he might not necessarily block shots, but he would cause the offensive player to kind of adjust, and then he would miss the shot. So it was just as effective as a block shot as long as Kentucky got the rebound. But it is kind of a changeup. And last night on the coach's show, Mike, I don't know if you were listening, but Kenny Payne did the second half, and he had a great quote about Nick Richards. He said if we could cut his head off, he would be one of the best big men in the country, meaning a lot of Nick's problems are mental. Is there a way to kind of overcome those kind of mental hurdles that appears Nick Richards has?
Well, one of the ways to overcome it is play.
Yeah.
You got to play. You got to build your own confidence. Confidence can't be given. I mean, the coaches all want you to be successful. That's, you know, they work with you every day. You can't do any more. So you have to build your own confidence by the way you play. And one thing that Reed was really good at. He anticipated what was going on with the ball and with big guys. And then he was able to really get down and battle at the low post. I mean, he would wrap around. He might come all the way on a front situation. He really leaned on people. He had the one thing that the other two guys right now haven't shown me, tremendous lower body strength and the ability to use that. Your point is well taken, where he put his arms straight up in the air, but he held his ground because he was strong in the lower body. And that's what Grant Williams is. I mean, Grant Williams is so strong in the lower body, and once he gets a little edge on you, when he has the ball, dips the shoulder or gets the hip, his strength pushes him through. And Reed was able to battle that, and using that as an example. And Nick and EJ don't have that right now because of where they are in their careers. So they're going to have to do it a different way. They're going to have to play defensively a different way. But to your point, Nick is a guy that somehow can play really well, give him some confidence. And then other times he doesn't play well, and his confidence seems gone.
Yeah.
And EJ, I think EJ's just warming up, Curtis. I think he's finally getting it. The game has slowed down. I think the game was so fast for him for about 3 months of the season. But I think the game is slowing down now, and he's got to continue along that path. It'll be interesting. It's a big step for both these guys. Plenty of minutes, big-time minutes against really good teams, and you'll see what they're made of.
He is Mike Pratt. His segments are brought to you by Boone's Butcher Shop. I'm Curtis Birch in for Tom. Coming up next, I've got to ask Mike about the biggest story in college basketball from last night. If you want to interact with the show, you can shoot me a tweet at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. You are listening to The Leach Report.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back into the Leach Report, which is served up by Wild Egg. Still talking to Mike Pratt. I'm Curtis Birch in for Tom today. You can listen to me weeknight 6 to 8 p.m. on Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on WLAP, 630 WLAP in Lexington. Mike, I'm guessing you probably saw... I shouldn't probably assume because you're not supposed to do that. But Duke and North Carolina played a game. There were some commercials before that game if you watch any kind of anything. And 30 seconds in, Zion Williamson blew out his shoe and actually had a knee injury of his own. But my question to you, Mike, have you ever seen a guy blow out a shoe like that?
Not like that, but I've seen people lose the heel of shoes in games where they blow out the heel but not like that. No, that was really weird. But he's a big fella, and he was putting a lot of stress going the way he was going across toward the charity stripe, and at 280 pounds or whatever he is, that shoot just gave way. And he's fortunate, as far as we know, that nothing serious happened.
Yeah, it seems like he's probably in a pretty similar situation to Reed Travis. Mike Krzyzewski after the game said that it was a knee sprain, and they're concerned, but they didn't have any update until after they did the MRI, just like Reed. So we'll keep an eye out on that as well. Obviously, that'll have huge impact around college basketball. Finally, Mike, I did want to ask you kind of about the wings, and it isn't necessarily something you think about with an injury to the front court player and how it's going to impact the guards, but what do you think, will the guards be able to maybe step up and carry some of the load that Reed Travis was handling? I mean, Tyler Hero had been doing a great job of getting rebounds. Do you think the other backcourt players are going to need to do the same?
Well, yeah, everybody's going to have to pitch in, Curtis, and up their game in a lot of different areas, and one could be the rebounding. But again, it's going to be if EJ and Nick can get 10 rebounds between them or more, it's been a good night. Mm-hmm. And so I think everybody's got to step up, but there's going to be a lot asked of these two guys, and to get around the rim and get the rebounds and be a factor around the rim that Reed was. So, that's it'll be interesting. But Keldon Johnson can rebound when he wants. Quickly's rebounded. Hero's rebounded. I think that it's going to be a shared situation. And again, these two young fellas, they've got their work cut out for them. But boy, what a great opportunity for two guys that have had limited playing time.
Mm-hmm.
Both have had flashes of brilliance. And now they got a chance to step on the big stage and show everybody what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. The first half that Nick Richards had at Missouri was really impressive. He was all over the place, but then he kind of faded in the second half. But I'm not going to hold the second half of Missouri against anybody, because, as Calipari said, I think they were just trying to get out of there after the Travis injury and just wanted to get back. Well, they didn't get back home, as you know, Mike. You guys ended up in Columbia a little bit longer than anticipated, but get out of the gym.
I think, Curtis, that's that's not the verbiage, although I understand what Cal was saying.
Yeah.
These guys had a second half. They'd gone through a tough stretch. They had played so well, and now they came out, and I was really pleased with the way they played the first half. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of teams would struggle after what Kentucky's been through. They would struggle. And Kentucky did, and they built that 18-point lead, and they just relaxed. And you can term it any way you want. They just relaxed. They knew they had the game. They figured the opponent out, and they were just totally relaxed and let them back in the game, but held on. So that wasn't a shocking second half. Or let's put it this way, it's not disturbing, as you said.
Yeah.
That first half was impressive.
Yeah, without a doubt. He is Mike Pratt. Listen to his call of the game with Tom Leach. Everyone, turn down your TV volume and turn up your radio. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Okay, Curtis. See you, buddy.
See you. Coming up next, Justin Rowland of Rivals. Impact of UK football's coaching changes on recruiting. I'm Curtis Birch, in for Tom Leach today. You are listening to The Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Welcome back in to the Leach Report. I'm Curtis Birch, in for Tom today. If you want to shoot a tweet with the show and interact, you can send it at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Got a couple of questions that we'll get to in a bit. But right now, I do want to talk to Justin Rowland. And segments with him are presented by Shuffle Bean Coffee, because Justin, there's been some shakeup in the UK football coaching staff, and I want to get your take on the impact on recruiting. John Summerall is going to move in and be the inside linebackers coach after Brad White has been promoted to the defensive coordinator. None of this, I guess, is technically official yet, this from UK, but all reports indicate that's what's going to happen. So, first off, from a recruiting side, how big a loss is Matt House?
I think it's a lot bigger loss than people would have guessed maybe a year ago. You know, he didn't have a lot of commits to his name, to his credit, before this last class. But, you know, they moved away from Ohio and Florida a little bit in the 2019 class for a variety of reasons, and they compensated by hitting Georgia really hard. And I heard from a number of people that the staff really trusted House's evaluation of prospects. You know, they're not just getting 4- and 5-star guys. They got to get the 3-stars right. And they trusted him, and he closed the deal. Some of their best players have been from Georgia recently, and he's been a big reason for that.
So when you move in a guy, and this is something that I'm always curious about, obviously Brad White has a ton of coaching acumen. He's been an NFL guy for years. Josh Allen, I mean, just praised him every chance he got about how much he made him a better player. And I think the drafting of where Josh Allen will go this year comparatively to where he was projected last year will indicate that. But what kind of recruiter has he grown into on the trail, considering he didn't have a ton of experience when he first got to Kentucky?
I think I could tell right when he was hired, he was energetic about it. I think sometimes when a guy maybe is in a new recruiting situation, you know, recruiting at an SEC school for the first time, given his track record at other schools and in the NFL, he had something to prove, and it felt like he was trying to prove something. He was just a really tough situation. I mean, he was recruiting the East Coast, and, you know, if you get one guy from the Northeast at Kentucky, that's like 2 years' worth of work. And so he did get guys to visit, but I suspect moving forward, his recruiting role as a coordinator will be to have some kind of relationship with pretty much all of their defensive recruits, as opposed to, you know, being the lead man with a lot of guys.
Now, the guy that is kind of replacing House in the sense that he's going to be coaching the NBA inside linebackers is John Sumrall, and many people listening are probably familiar with that name. He played at Kentucky in the early 2000s. He was most recently at Ole Miss. He's worked at Troy and had a bunch of different jobs throughout college. A native of Alabama, he has a lot of ties to kind of the South, and I think even recruits Louisiana to a certain extent. How good a recruiter is he?
From everything I've heard, he's a very good recruiter and a very good coach. Ole Miss fans and people there were surprised, maybe a little bit offended that they thought he made a lateral move in spite of his history at Kentucky. But I think Kentucky fans understand that a little bit more. But really good as a recruiter. I mean, he's been all over Memphis especially. I think he's going to recruit Memphis pretty heavily for Kentucky as well, but also Alabama. I mean, he had a 5-star N'Kobe Dean pretty much in the bag. He ended up committing to Georgia, but I think he had a 4-star and 2 3-star commitments to his credit this year, and Ole Miss people were really upset to see him go, both because of his coaching and recruiting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably being undersold a little bit from the Ole Miss side. I mean, you get a chance to come back to where you played your college football. That's a pretty good kind of thing to have happen for you, even if it is quote-unquote a lateral move. From a positional standpoint, you talked about kind of the coaching overall. What do you think the impact on the defensive staff as a whole? I mean, anytime you kind of change the guy at the top of the defensive structure, even though, you know, Stoops is always going to have a hand in it. And, you know, it's one of those situations where they did it with Matt House, so they probably have a kind of a blueprint. But from when you promote from within, a kind of a guy who was your peer is now your boss. To a certain extent, how do you think all that will shake out with the defensive staff?
It's going to be a little bit awkward, I assume. But House kind of had a similar situation, you know, coming into the staff late and getting bumped up. But obviously, you know, we heard right off the bat that White was probably going to be option 1A, and they didn't waste any time in making it official. So this is something Stoops obviously felt very strongly about. It's interesting when House left, when that whole thing unfolded, I heard from some people that, like, well, this is the downside to hiring and promoting NFL guys, because they want to go back to the league. And, you know, White, you know, maybe Stoops believes that he wants to climb the college ladder. Maybe this is a statement to that effect. But it'll be interesting to see how he and Stoops interact and how they share responsibilities and coexist on the sideline.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And, I mean, that's the thing that I like the fact that he's bringing in guys that obviously have a ton of experience in the linebacking in front, because you know, his specialty is the secondary. And I like Vince Marrow on National Signing Day when he was talking to the media, was joking about, you know, they lose all those secondary guys, and he basically was calling out his boss saying, hey, you're going to be in charge of getting these secondary guys going again. But That was the other, I guess, coaching news, is that Vince Mero got a little bit of a promotion, and I believe his title will probably be associate head coach. I mean, obviously just rewarding a guy there who's done a lot of good for UK football, right?
Yeah, I remember back in high school, like, everybody, when they were, like, going into their senior year, they added all these titles in different clubs to look at on their college resume. That's kind of what coaches do to keep guys happy on their staffs. And I think it's well-deserved. I mean, it's kind of an executive title, and he's had really an executive function just in terms of roster management, putting out fires, communicating the message, hitting the talking points. He stayed very on message. And because he had recruited about 40% of Kentucky's roster at one point. And, you know, those guys always have a special bond with their recruiting coach. I mean, I don't think people realize when you see some guys from Ohio pouting on the sideline, they go to Vince Morrow, and he's the one that's talking them off the ledge. I mean, he just has that kind of almost a head coach responsibility in terms of the overall roster.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I think it might have been kind of a situation where Vince Mero had to kind of get a catch-all title because he was racking up so many different jobs that his business card might have been full, in the sense that I found out that he was also the NFL liaison, recruiting coordinator, tight ends coach. So when you just put associate head coach, you can kind of have all those responsibilities under one umbrella. So makes it a little bit easier, I guess, from that standpoint. Justin, let everybody know where they can read your work and where they can follow you on social.
Curtis, appreciate it, man. CatsIllustrated.com and Rollin Rivals on Twitter. Thanks again.
You're welcome, man. He's right, Justin Rollin. All his segments are presented by Shuffle Bean Coffee. Coming up next, Daryl Bird of the Catsballs. There's some silliness that was going on in the SEC last night, and I want to get my man D Bird's take on that. I'm Curtis Birch. In for Tom today, and the Leach Report is served up by Wild Eggs.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
Welcome back in to the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs. I'm Curtis Birch, in for Tom today. You can hear me daily on a podcast with Kyle Tucker of The Athletic, who is on this program Monday mornings. Just search Locked On Kentucky on your podcast player of choice. Right now, we are joined by Daryl Bird of the Catsballs. And we got some, Daryl, I hope you're going to be okay with this. We got a potpourri of topics that I wanted to get to. And a lot of, they're all SEC related, basketball related. But something I hadn't got to mention yet that I saw that I can't recall ever seeing before in a basketball game, and I'm going to lean on your wisdom and breadth of knowledge to see if you've ever seen it. A stuffed bulldog being thrown on a court, causing a technical, and then Georgia losing to Mississippi State on a technical free throw.
No, not even. I have seen items thrown onto the court several times. Usually it's coins. And back during the, if you want to call it, good old days of the U of L Memphis rivalry when it was insane in the 70s, somebody threw a pocket knife onto the floor.
Oh, my.
And the Kentucky-Tennessee rivalry, of course, goes way back to in the 70s when opposing student sections threw oranges at the opposing players when they came out on the floor. So it's there. I've never seen an immediate technical. Usually they will warn. Yeah. They'll come on the PA, and the referees will, and the AD will sometimes, and just get after them. No, we do not do this. Happens again, there's going to be a technical. And this one was immediate, which kind of surprised me.
Yeah, I think that upset Tom Crean after the game. He said that I think he said the exact same thing that you said. Normally there's a warning, and then if it continues on, you get the technical. But it should be pointed out, to set up the full thing of the game, if you hadn't seen a replay at this point, there was only a half second left, and I believe one of the Weatherspoon brothers was at the line for Mississippi State. He missed the first free throw. That's when the Bulldog, toy Bulldog, not a real Bulldog, now that would have been a thing if that happened, was thrown onto the court.
Yep.
Technical. He makes the technical free throw, go back, misses the second free throw he had been awarded after being fouled, and the game ends because once the rebound is touched, the clock runs out. So there was a good chance Georgia would have lost anyway if Weatherspoon made the second of his free throws, but there would have been a chance. So just a crazy situation.
Yeah, and I think they should have also given him a little leeway because, let's face it, they have turned that into – it's kind of a social event. You know, when the hockey games, when they throw fish onto the ice after the first goal, and they would throw teddy bear or stuffed animals out. Mm-hmm. And this is not completely unique, and it was a teddy bear, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I think that's what makes
animal.
That's what makes the
story. Warn them and get on with it.
Makes the story so weird that it was a little baby bulldog stuffed animal. But looking at the SEC, what's interesting right now, we got a tweet from Justin earlier. He asked, where do you think Kentucky finishes in the SEC, and what seed do you think they'll get in the NCAA tournament? I'll hold off on the NCAA tournament seed talk because with the Zion Williams injury and the Reed Travis injury, there's a lot that's going to factor into that. But last night was interesting in the SEC because LSU fell to Florida in overtime at LSU. The game was, you know, played there in Baton Rouge. So now Kentucky and LSU are tied. LSU obviously holds a tiebreaker. But what do you think? How is the SEC race going to shake out going forward, Darryl?
LSU, I think, had it won if they had just taken care of business. Because Tennessee and UK were going to knock each other out of contention, and LSU was going to skate in. And UK needed some help, and they got it from Florida, of all people. I think LSU's in trouble because they still have Tennessee left. And I think Tennessee's going to take care of them. It may, with Reed Travis being out, it may have shifted it all back to where Tennessee ends up winning the SEC, I think. So it's going to be incredibly hard for UK to go into Knoxville without Reed. And he may be back. We'll have to wait and see. But if he's not available to go in there and win without him, it's an incredibly tall order, I think, and puts Tennessee back in the driver's seat. They beat LSU, they beat Kentucky, they win it, and quite frankly, they should win it. You can beat the other two top teams within, you know, 10 days of each other. You should get the title.
Yeah, that's the thing.
UK finishes second.
Yeah, I tend to kind of agree with you on that, but it is – like all the top teams have shown either weaknesses or something's just happened that when coming down the stretch you didn't anticipate. Obviously, we talked about the Reed Travis injury, who's going to be out at least 2 weeks. LSU shown that, you know, they have their flaws last night, losing to Florida. Tennessee loses to Kentucky and then follows that up with, I mean, they beat Vanderbilt, but it wasn't a really good performance. So you'll see what there is going forward. I mean, it's going to be fun to kind of watch down the stretch, and I think I don't think we're done with a Florida type game with maybe one of these top where someone comes up and impacts the race when you didn't anticipate it.
No, UK had better be really careful when they go to Oxford, Mississippi on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock because they could really throw a wrench into everybody's plans.
Yeah, there's no question.
That's a dangerous team.
And as, you know, speaking of dangerous team, the other kind of score. The outcome of this game wasn't surprising, but maybe the score and the way it happened was to a certain extent. Kentucky's next opponent, Auburn, beat Arkansas, which you would anticipate. Auburn's better than Arkansas this season. But they won 79-56, and they hit 17 three-pointers. Utterly ridiculous. And, you know, if Auburn comes in Saturday and is hitting outside shots, then Kentucky's going to be in for a battle.
Yeah, they are. I'm really looking forward to Saturday's game just for that reason. And I'm be curious to see how UK plays without Reed Travis. I'd much rather have him on the roster, obviously. But taking him out gives UK the potential to be a more athletic, more up and down the court, high-flying, you know, 100-point type team. And Auburn wants to go that way, so that I think that may actually play to UK's favor. I don't think it plays to UK's favor when they have to go to Knoxville and bang and bang and bang with Grant Williams again, because guess who? PJ gets to do that this time, which means PJ probably won't score 25. He'll have his work cut out. But the Auburn matchup this weekend, I would expect an ultra-high-scoring game. And, you know, Cal said it before, if the other team hits 10 or 15 three-pointers, you congratulate them and move on. And that hasn't always panned out. I think there was one game this year where somebody hit a lot of threes and they still won anyway. But it may be a basket-for-basket type up and down the floor, which are really fun from a fan's perspective.
Yeah, I think it will be. And maybe this is – Ashton Hagans had a great second half at Missouri, pretty good second half. I mean, he scored in double figures and was really one of the only offensive contributors for UK. I think he hit most of their shots. No one could score in the second half of Columbia. But this may be, he's kind of, I don't know how else to describe it other than kind of a slump. And it's not been like he's been terrible, but he hasn't been as good as he had been, you know, starting at the UNC and getting part of the way through the SEC play. So maybe this will be a good cure for what's been ailing him.
Yeah, he needs to get up and go. And Tom, we've seen it every, remember the great John Wall went to Calipari his first year complaining because he wasn't having fun because it was harder than he thought it would be in Castlebrook. Yeah, guess what? It is. Deal with it. And Nashon's going through the exact same thing. I was on world leader there for a while, and then, wait a minute, people have film on me, and they learn how to get by me and maybe do some things I'm not used to. So you have to up your game, and then they'll adjust again, and you up it one more time. That's how these guys say they want to get to the league. Well, this is how they do it. You reinvent your game two or three times during your college career, and you get better and better every step. And he's in the middle of one of those steps right now. He got by on pure speed and quickness and was stealing the ball left and right, and now he's got to be craftier about it, and he's got to be smarter about it and mix that with his speed and athleticism, and he'll take it up a notch, and he'll be just fine.
He is Daryl Bird. Daryl, let everybody know where they can read, consume your content, and follow you on social media.
Social media, Twitter is easy. It's my name, Daryl Bird. Can't get any simpler than that. Issue-wise, catspaws.com. The print edition is available for subscription at magazine.catspaws.com. You can sign up there, and we will send your copies directly to your mailbox.
Thank you so much for your time today, Daryl.
Thanks, Curtis.
Coming up next, going to read a couple tweets that we got today and get you up to date on some historic UK scores from this date. I'm Curtis Birch, in for Tom today. You are listening to The Leach Report.
It's The Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Final segment of The Leach Report. I'm Curtis Birch, in today. Let's get you your Donato slice of UK history. On this date in 1970, Dan Issel scored 51 points and grabbed 17 rebounds, but he wasn't the leading scorer in the game. That is because Kentucky was playing at LSU, and Pete Maravich dropped 64 points. Kentucky won the game 121-105. Man, Daryl and I were talking about a high-scoring game potentially this weekend between Kentucky and Auburn. If it could get to that level, that would be rather entertaining. Reading a couple tweets before we get out of here. Craig tweeted in, said, great job this morning on the Leach Report. Very prepared and knowledgeable. The show flows well. Well, thank you, Craig. Your check is in the mail. Alan tweeted in when Daryl and I were talking about the Bulldog kind of costing the Georgia Bulldogs a game, the toy Bulldog, that is. He said C.M. Newton was coaching Vanderbilt, and they lost an SEC regular season championship game. But what happened was somebody threw a tennis ball on the floor against Florida. So there you go. There is kind of precedent, even though a tennis ball is a little bit different than a toy Bulldog. I've been Curtis Birch. Thanks to Daryl Bird, Mike Pratt, and Justin Roller for joining in this show today. Thanks to Shannon for producing. This has been The Leach Report.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report.